Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. This is Keith's panel, and today my guest is Tomas Torres. He's a professor of chemistry from the Autonomous University in Madrid, Spain, and he's an expert on all sorts of things, as you're going to hear. So, Tomas, welcome to Science Studio.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure for me.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and But as usual on this program, I'm not so interested in jumping straight into what you do today. I'm interested, how did you get here? What was, when you were seven, what were you thinking of for a career, if anything?
I wanted to be a Real Madrid player at that time.
Oh, you know, they need players right now,
I'll tell you. It was the soccer, football, that we call there, is the was the most important thing for us at that time. Then Real Madrid was an East the best team in the world, and then I was thinking only about that.
Do you remember the players that you Di Stefano?
Di Stefano was already a little older for me, but Gento, Puskas, and several other they were the winner of six championship of Europe at that time.
It's interesting because people tend to look at soccer now, football. And all these good teams, the British teams, seem to be very good at the moment. But they're all full of foreign players. And even back then, you had the Hungarians.
This was the Hungarian. Puskas was Hungarian. Yeah. But when I start following the Real Madrid, he had already won the five titles. And then I needed at that time to wait for six more years till they got the sixths. I remember I was already. And then after that, 30 more years till the seventh.
Right.
But now we have 13 titles. Yeah. No, nobody has. Even Liverpool has so much.
Well, who knows? We'll just wait a few more years and see how it goes. Okay, so you weren't thinking about science. When did science rear its ugly head?
I started thinking about science when I was already 13 or 14, when a cousin of mine gave me as present for Christmas time a kit of chemicals. It was, I can't remember the name, Cheminova or something like that. Was a kit just for making experiments. And then one of my colleagues in the school had one, and then she gave me one, and then I started making some experiments. And then I became interested in chemistry, not too much, but enough. It was my first contact with the science.
Do you remember what experiments you were doing?
No, base acid experiments or just precipitations or crystallization of copper sulfate, these kind of things, relative easy things and not dangerous at that time. Some of them were not so so nice, the production of sulfuric acid, a few of them. It was quite big.
And your parents, they were enthusiastic about this interest?
Not too much. Not too much in the sense that they know that I was changing a lot, and I was not particularly interested. Let's see that I have no vocation at all of chemist. And when I finish my studies in the secondary school, then I was to the university, and then I didn't know what to do, really.
All this was in Madrid?
Yes. At that time, there was only one big university in Madrid. This was the Complutense University. This is very old. And then, but this year, the year that I was starting, Franco, Generalissimo, yes, founded three different universities in Bilbao, in Barcelona, and in Madrid, and called them Autonoma University of Barcelona, of Madrid, and then from Bilbao.
So and he introduced the word autonoma.
Yes, all the universities at that time were depending on the central government. And then, in this particular case, they wanted to have something with a given independence, more focused in science, in research. The idea was not bad. This was the official idea. The real one was that these new universities were located far from the center of Madrid. They want to have the students as far as possible. And then I was there, and there was places and possibilities for getting positions. And then I was thinking about chemistry or medicine. But since I had already some knowledge about chemistry because of the kit that I received, then I decided to do that. No vocation at all.
There you are.
Yes.
And so then, you studied. Did you do research as an undergraduate student, or was that
Not at that time. Now they are developing a few things, also in connection with the universities, but not at that time. But at that time, and then why this new university and not the Complutense University? Just because this new university was the office for the registration were close to my house. You know, this was the reason.
Okay.
Then you can see that I had not any given vocational.
So you did ever sort of live away from home then? So that's part of the educational experience, if you can get it, right?
Yeah.
To live amongst students in a college, but that wasn't possible.
Yeah, no, not at that time, yeah. And then, but it was nice in the sense that my parents always gave me the opportunity of doing whatever I wanted. They never interfered, and then this was was very nice for my formation. And then this is why I was a student of the Autonoma University of Madrid. But once I finish, I move. After finishing the degree, I move to the National Spanish Research Council. This is like the Max Planck Institute or the CNRS in France. This is a research institution. In principle, nothing to do with the university. I move there for doing my PhD. And then afterwards, I spent more than 2 years in Germany postdoc in Max Planck Institute, also not at the university. Later, I came back to the Consejo in Madrid. And then afterwards, I realized what I call my best postdoc. It was not a postdoc, but was 5 years in a pharmaceutical company. I was working for Merck Serp and Dom.
Oh, so you do, in fact, have some experience most of us don't have.
Amazing, because this helped me to do many things in the future. Not only to know about medicinal chemistry, but to know about the real life, because we at the university, we don't know what is the real life, you know?
Absolutely.
Was amazing, but
has that made you a better teacher, a better mentor of students, because you've had that experience?
Yes, because at that time I had the possibility, this was a new research institute they had, and then I had the possibility of teaching people there, of advising thesis, for example, and then publishing, because this was the only way. And then my way was to follow there, or just to come back to the National Spanish Research Council. But suddenly there was a new thing, and was that in Spain there was so many people at the university without any permanent position that they launched some places for them. And then in order just to be polite, they decide that also very good people with a good CV in the research area could also apply for that.
To say that.
They were not waiting that a few of them, like me, could come there without having any teaching. Okay. Then I joined the university without in a national examination, without having any teaching, but they considered very positively my research study. And then I decided to go there because at the company, I was receiving more money, for sure, was very nice, but it was not really what I wanted, you know. I remember perfectly that after having developing a lot of work in that given area, they cut suddenly from West Point, the central was in West Point here in the States. I was several times there. They
make decisions.
Suddenly, decisions taken or patents, for example, what to patent, what to... Then I decided, yes, to go to the academia. And then, as I told you, now I consider this like my best postdoc. It was extraordinary.
The business of teaching and not having had experience, when you first started to teach, what was your reaction to having be in front of this class of inquisitive students?
It was not so bad. The problem was the day before, you know. The day before, I say, what should I do? This is 100 people in front of me. And then I never took a pencil just for writing in the... Then I was in a empty classroom just for trying just to make some exercise to do something. It was impossible. I tried during a few minutes. I said, come on.
Just wait until they all
yes,
turn
and then
up.
And then I was there and it was not so bad. And right. I could write there. And this was a without any teaching in many, many years. And then I come back to the Autonomous University just by chance, because it was not really... I could have taken a position at any place at the Spanish universities, because this was a general examination, but it was in Madrid, and it was also, again, close to me, and then and it was a very good university in comparison with the other ones, and this was the reason.
Do you remember what you were like as a student and how you interacted with your faculty and what has changed since now? You still teach a little, I suppose. Yeah. Not much, perhaps, but you do teach.
Yeah.
The attitude of student-teacher, the relationship between the two has changed dramatically.
Dramatically.
Tell us what you've observed for that change.
It was really dramatically because, first of all, I recognize that probably the intellectual level of the students is much better now, because they are quicklier, they have now the possibility of having internet and many other things, and then... But from the level of the knowledge, is really amazing. They have no 50% of the knowledge that we had at the time.
Right.
And then it was more serious. And then this was about the knowledge. And about the treatment with the teacher, this is also completely, completely different. At that time, I consider myself an open person. I say I was never a teacher there on the top. But... and then I have very nice contact with them, but with a given respect, you know. Now, also, in most of the cases, the respect is the same, but in 50% of the cases, this is not the case. They are considering that you are one more, you know, and they don't... and they are questioning all kind of things you are doing, you know. Then they think that... You should do whatever they want and what is really interesting for them, and they are not considering about your experience. I say that because nobody will hear me in Spain.
I shall make sure
because
that
if
this
not,
gets...
my students will kill me. In any case, I am not teaching now regular students in the degree. I prefer. This is another question, very interesting. I will retire. Relative soon. I don't know when. Officially, I can stay 3 more years. In Spain, we can stay till 70 years, and then I can stay there 3 more years. Then what is interesting is that I was teaching all my life important matters, like organic chemistry, for example. This was... But long ago, I started teaching in the masters and other kind of things, and I leave the good... let's say, subjects to the new people. Then that means that now that I am close to the retirement, I decide to take again this matter. I can do that because I am the oldest scientifically, you know, in position, not right. In age also, I am the oldest there. Then I have the right to take the one I want.
You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm here with Tomás Torres from the Autónoma in Madrid in Spain. We'll be back in one moment. Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell, Tomás Torres from the Autónoma in Madrid in Spain. And so we've learned all about you. We've taken a long time over learning a little bit about Tomás, from football fan to teacher with a certain attitude. Let's talk now about what it is your science. What is it that's turning you on right now in science?
I was very, very lucky with this too, because typically when you are starting your independent career, then you are taking part of your knowledge coming from the PhD or yes, from the postdoc. But I was free because I got the position there. And then I was free to choose whatever I want. Then I discovered in the literature something completely different. I never so before the phthalocyanins. They are porphyrin analogs.
And just to let the listener know, porphyrin is that big molecule. It's got four nitrogens in the middle, and it combines things like iron, and that's the component in hemoglobin that carries your oxygen around to the muscles. So that's a porphyrin, and a phthalocyanin is something quite similar, but not the same.
It's quite similar. This is an artificial molecule.
Right.
And then it was very nice because at that time, there we are talking about 30 few years ago, there was something new, and was the molecular materials started being studied. They were materials constructed by molecules, not inorganic ones only. And then it was very interesting to me, and I didn't know at that time that it was the beginning of what is called today nanoscience and nanotechnology.
But just go back to that decision process again. Yeah. What made you so attracted to the phthalocyanin molecule?
Mainly because I found two reviews of Dieter Wöhrle, a German guy in Bremen. He was very, very, very good. I met him later many times. And then he wrote two reviews in a journal for a company, for Merck company, German company, not Mercer Pandom. And then it was very, very nice. These kind of systems were aromatic systems. I was always a fan of aromaticity. Aromatic system containing 18 pi electrons with many, many properties, and therefore they have also a very strong color in the visual range.
So it was the color that attracted you?
The color attracted me a lot because porphyrins have a big color. They have an absorption, but a very small one, responsible for the green color of the plants in the chlorophyll, and then, as you say, the hemoglobin in the red one in the case of the blood. But phthalocyanins are amazing. They have a very strong absorption. Then the color that reflects the electronic composition of the macrocycle.
Can you change that color? I should know this, but I don't. With suitable substituents,
yes.
Can you play the game of changing the colors?
Look at this. In the case of phthalocyanins, not too much. And you know what? Because phthalocyanins are formally tetra-aza-porphyrins. They are like porphyrins with benzene rings condensed at the periphery. And these benzene rings isolate the central ring from the substituents.
Right.
Then the color I am talking about that give the blue color, phthalocyanins are producing tons, the copper phthalocyanins for paintings, inks, dyes, the cars, the brilliant cars that you see are painted with phthalocyanins, all these brilliant colors. And they are blue, because this color is coming from the distance between the homo and the lumbar lobule. And this is almost the same in all phthalocyanins.
Right.
You can find more than 70 different central metals that are inside of the phthalocyanins, but the homo-lumbar distance is more or less the same. But
and that's because of this insulation.
Yes.
And that's the principle here, that you can have a very active redox metal or something, but
exactly.
If you insulate it, and for that means you just need a CH2, one simple atom of carbon, tetravalent, and that will do the insulation.
Exactly, right. Exactly. And then this is amazing to have the same color, more or less. This is the 700 nanometer, this is the distance homolumo, but with different properties as a function of how big or how high is the homo and the lumo. The homo and the lumo distance
is
the same,
is
but
the same.
Are at the different,
right.
And the properties are completely different. The redox
it's
properties.
It's like climbing 1,000 feet from 0 to 1,000, or 26,000 to 27,000 on Everest.
Yes, and this attracted to me a lot. And
right.
Then I started working in this area, and then I never was interested in moving to other related areas, like biomedicine, for example, or nanomedicine. But recently I moved because the money is there in Europe, at least, you know.
Let's just reinforce that, because I hear this a lot from scientists, that quite often you'll find that although you'll say, well, society doesn't mind what you do, Thomas, you can do what you want, but we're only going to give you money if it's something that we think is potentially useful, which means nowadays nanomaterials for new types of property or biomedicine. These are the two hot areas of today. They may not be in 10 years, but today that's where the money is. So you're a money chaser. You're an ambulance chaser, if you put it in legal terms. Yes.
If you try to develop intellectually a given idea about something, you can do by yourself. Or you can do much better if you have two students that are very close to you. But if you try just to cover a broad field, you need people. Then if you want to have a group like I still have of 25 or 30 people, you need money. Well. Then it's a question. Then it's a question. Why? Because I discovered something that is very important. If you take two students, probably you take two normal ones or average one, it's very difficult to take really two very, very good ones because this is statistically. But if you have 30 students, you can localize two very good ones.
You take a large number and you sift through and then you get, it's like panning for gold, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of spillage when you pan for gold, I'm sure.
I know.
So is this the best way to train the next generation of scientists? By taking large numbers and then suddenly you get two wizards and the others are sort of somehow neglected to a certain extent and perhaps lose a certain interest in the topic.
I completely agree with you. The reason is that I develop myself in a given way, and then I am not telling you that this is the best way. I think that I am following a Darwin development. I am developing according what I have and the possibilities that I have and then what I want to do at that time. Then I am not looking for the best in an absolute way, you know. And then I recognize that probably the research and then the focus, the formation of the new students should be done in a different way. But I am telling you what I did. And then I cannot change it.
You can't change what you did, but I presume you can change the way you would perhaps develop or wish to develop into the future.
What I transmit to the people, I am doing that at every time. And then I will do exactly the same that I did. And I was very lucky with my development. But I am not telling you on this connection that I did the best. I did the best with my possibilities at any time, you know. But probably we could do things much better than we did.
You visit the U.S. quite a lot. You visit Germany. I'm sure you visit many other places. Do you think this pyramidal scheme that you're talking about, and they have it in CNRS in France, they used to have it and still do in Germany to a lesser extent than they did. But that's not what happens in North America. Do you think that the Spanish system, the system that you're in the middle of, and I would say partially responsible for still, needs to change?
Needs to change, but I don't know if this is in this direction. In the States, for sure, the States have all the best things and the worst ones. Yeah. Then a few things for sure that I will subscribe and then I will take this for us, you know. But it's also quite difficult to have this because this is a question also of money. Now Spain is regarding papers, regarding publication, regarding science in general, among the 8th and the 10th country in the world.
Oh, since I was a student in England.
But this is...
It's done tremendously well.
But this is unbelievable.
Yes.
Because we have no media for doing that. This is, for having this, we have to follow a different scheme. We cannot follow an American scheme, you know, because we will not develop.
So that development of good science in Spain that I've just mentioned, how has that transformed into the sort of economic growth of Spain? Has there been a commensurate increase in high-tech research and high-tech jobs?
This is exactly what I want to say. This is the effort that we are doing have not impact in our economy. They have impact in the general knowledge, and then we are doing very nice things, but we have not a direct impact in our economy. Then what we have to think is, and then the authorities are also thinking about that, the possibility of focusing in such a way that we could interact more with companies, with industries. But we have not technological companies, for example, in chemistry, that we can interact.
Well, for example, do you and your group develop patents and therefore try to do startup businesses like is so common in North America?
In my case, yes. I have more than 40 patents.
All right, that's a lot.
But this is unusual. This is coming because I was working in the company, as I told you before.
Yeah, that's a
and then I have this culture, because I know that patents are nice, or even for getting some money. Or I have, for example, a small spin-off during the last 10 years in nanotechnology, producing graphene or single wall nanotubes that are used for different purposes. Now we are using graphene or graphene seeds.
And for what purpose?
For asphalts, for incorporate this to roads, you know, and other things. That means that these kind of things.
Hang on, you're putting these high tech materials into asphaltenes
for
road surfaces.
Yes, yes. And they are not exactly graphene, because graphene is really, if we are physicists, we will say that the graphene is only one layer.
Right.
For sure. Two layers is not graphene anymore. Two, three, four layers are materials like graphene related to more graphite, let's say. But we are talking about 30 layers. This is not graphite.
Okay. And these are on the roads?
Yes.
And
yes.
We've got to finish the program, Thomas, but yes. I want to hear, what does that do to the surface? It makes it smoother.
Yes, smaller.
But does it wear any better? Or
and then it would be possible also to develop interaction of the car with the road, you know, because finally the last idea will be to make an intelligent road, you know.
Okay.
For sure, we are not doing that now, but this is our goal, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we may sooner or later get intelligent roads, but when you're going to get
intelligent
drivers,
roads means
intelligent drivers is what they
needed. Yeah, intelligent driver, but as you know, we are coming to cars without any driver, or you can sleep.
That's right.
And then the road would interact with the machine, you know. Then this is a focused.
That's very interesting. And it all started with your desire to be a football player. Thomas Torres from the Autónoma in Madrid, Spain. Thank you so much for being here. Great fun.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for this time. It was very, very funny and very nice.
Jolly good.
Thank you.
Sam Cassiano, we thank you for putting this together and making it sound so wonderful. And we'll be back next week with yet another Science Studio. Bye-bye.